Welcome to Battle Babes and our book talk for the first part of
Decision at Thunder Rift
by William H. Keith Jr. So, what do you think?
Surprisingly, I like it. It's good.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, no, I'm going to hate this. This can't be this good. And I didn't want to stop reading at the end of chapter 8.
Could have kept reading.
Well, maybe, but then I would have confused stuff that happened in our first section. And then what happens in the next section.
Yeah, I can see me doing that too. I stopped.
I stopped, yeah. Yeah, and the cool thing is my book has a picture right where I have to stop. So I get to look at it, and it's kind of cool. Does yours have the picture?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it does, because you would have said, oh, it does have the picture. Mine's better, though.
It's the same printing of the same book.
No, but mine's clearer.
Oh. Whatever.
Anyways, yeah, it's a good book so far. If I had to right now score the plot out of 1 to 5 and the characters of 1 to 5, I'd say the characters are still kind of lacking. It's about a 3 because there's not been much description about them. Like, I don't really know how tall this kid is or anything other than he has blonde hair because he does not look like the other inhabitants.
No, blonde hair. I'm guessing probably blue eyes because that's the stereotype standard. Taryn. Human from Earth, but first 8 chapters, introduction to the characters, but no character development.
Yeah, other than we know that he's the son of the commander of Carlisle's commandos, and he will be inheriting Carlisle's commandos from his dad, which, yes, we did figure out that the last name was Carlisle, and it was just a misprint on my book, and so that discussion has been solved. Yeah.
Yes, it has.
But other than that, there has not been much character development. So I could tell what kind of person he was only because they talk about he was showing up at work randomly or not. They weren't expecting him from his
late. He was showing up late to work.
Right. Late.
After seeing his girlfriend.
Typical 20-year-old. Yeah. Like, I could see Alex doing that if he had a girlfriend. Sorry.
No.
Sorry.
But yes.
Claire is not going to be any better.
No.
No, she'll probably be worse.
Claire will totally be worse. But yeah, typical 20-year-old understands what he needs to do, but doesn't want to do.
He doesn't have the investment yet, which I could totally see. Most 20-year-olds don't know what they really want to do. There are some, but even me at 20, I knew I was going to be a teacher, but I didn't really know exactly where I was going or how much I was going to fit into it. So I can see that development. But then again, the plot, like, it came out of nowhere. The storyline. I was not expecting it 8 chapters in to be where it is.
Yeah, like major drama right off the bat.
Yeah, right? That's literally how it opens up. The traitor is talking about what he's doing to sabotage the castle, which is their military base.
He's going through the motions of setting up, you know, stage 1, stage 2. Here we go. Let everybody else in. Kaboom!
Yeah, I was not expecting that at all. At all. And so I liked how the plot just, it got right in there and we didn't have to wait.
But on the flip side, there is actually a lot of characters you're introduced to right off the bat. But there's at least 8.
Yeah, and how many of them die right off the bat?
6
at least. I'm like, I don't know. I'm looking at my list and, well, there's the Sergeant Kai Griffith, who is Grayson's kind of mentor. He dies right off the bat. The chief tech dies right off the bat. There's a Lord Vogel who dies right off the bat. I've personally never read a book where you get introduced to these characters and then bam, gone.
They keep the main ones around. Introduce a character in the last chapter almost that is obviously going to be a major player, I'm guessing, throughout the whole book.
Yeah, that character did definitely seem like he could be very important. Thinking about the book, it happens on the planet Trell, or specifically Trell 1, as in the number 1. It is nowhere near Earth, and it is definitely not like Earth.
No, very arid, very desert, like lots of sun.
Lots of sun. Lots of sun and then lots of non-sun.
Yeah. They don't have a standard Earth day. Like, our days, they're 24 hours in a day, 7 days a week, 360 days in a year. Okay, perfect. Math, easy. Well, we grew up that way.
Mm-hmm.
1 day on Trell is 30 standard days. So 30 Earth days is how I'm processing it.
Right.
But 1 year is 45 Earth Day.
So it's like, okay, their day, it's 1.5 days to be a year. And at first I was like, this makes no sense to me. I'm never going to get it. And I felt really dumb. But then the main character talks about how he's been there for 5 years and he's getting good at it, but he still isn't 100% on the calculations.
Right. Well, it's a little confusing.
It is a little confusing, right? And because then the other thing is they have seasonal cycles, which is every 2 years, their 2 years. So every 3 12-1 days, which would be 90 standard days. So their seasons are about what our seasons are, but their seasons are quite odd because it's
day and night season versus snow and not snow.
Snow and not snow. Well, yeah, and some of our seasons aren't really like here in Calgary. It's spring and we definitely still have lots of snow.
Yeah, because I'm guessing you can't do much when there's no sunshine.
Well, yeah, but they said that their city, so Sargad, which is their main city, is awake 24/7. Well,
right.
Literally not 24/7, but all the time.
But all the time, yeah. It's got a full, people work all hours.
Yeah. So it's kind of, I think, like Vegas or Miami, somewhere, LA, that never sleeps.
Right.
Right. So yeah, that's, I think the hardest part of reading it was trying to really understand their days and years and stuff. But I kind of was like, well, I really don't care about that part. I think it's kind of cool to learn about it, but ultimately it's not going to make a difference one way or another. It might. And then I'm going to kick myself in the pants.
It might factor in just for, like, 'cause he's on the run by the end. When we're finished, he's hiding.
Yeah,
because he's an off-worlder and there was a rebellion, a coup, and a takeover. Like, he's a wanted, hunted man.
Well, yeah, as the heir to Carlisle Commandos, he, other than being Carlisle himself, his dad, Durant Carlisle, he would be the next person because they're lords. Right? They refer to him as master and lord. So he's got to have some kind of power somewhere. Whether they could use him as a hostage or a negotiation piece.
Mm-hmm. Just outright want to kill him. They don't want them on the planet. And they've tried to kill everybody that was there in the first place and pick off any stragglers.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I don't know. It's that whole dynamic. I was writing down questions. And my first question was, why did the Trolls hate the military so bad? Now, that was before I got further into the book. But even at the beginning of the first couple chapters, the looks that the locals or the natives, is that what they call them?
Natives, yeah.
Okay. So the natives keep giving them not impressed looks. And I was like, well, what's wrong? It sounds like they're there and they're their military. And the world is not savage place in the sense of like our Western society thoughts. They have a government. It's a monarchy that has an appointed unicameral legislature. So I kind of think the British government. So they have a monarchy, but the monarch really doesn't have any say.
Yeah, it's got a monarch and it's got advisors because it touches on the girlfriend's dad is the chief advisor
right
to the king. So there's a voting system.
Something. And so it's they talk about how Carlisle, so Grayson, the main character, and the other Carlisle commandos and the ones from their lance and their family members and stuff kind of see them as like living in a barbaristic society because they don't have a lot of the same technology and things that the other planets and groups have, but they don't. The planet was colonized, so they have to have some kind of technology.
Yeah. Well, and if it's an arid desert style, like they have to have found water and got it, like irrigation. They talk about having farms. So I kind of gathered it in my head. It's the Spanish coming to North America and finding the Inca. Or the Mayans. They have a sort of technology, but it's not as advanced as the Spanish have. So they think that they need to improve it.
Right. Definitely talking about the technology that they had, the type of environment that it would have had to be to get these kind of, I guess, explorers in the beginning to come over. And then, just like most of North America, how it evolved over time.
Yeah, more travelers, more immigrants bringing over their own stuff, kind of introducing technology to the new guys, and they adapt it and use it for whatever they need.
Right, and it's because of the environment, I was thinking that they can't. Like, there'll be resources there, but only a limited amount of resources that you could use or be able to trade with other people, unless you maybe were power hungry.
Right, yes, that's probably where the Bandit King comes in, traveling through the different planets in the periphery, raiding for what he has, taking over, ruling under, I don't know, probably a heavy thumb.
That's what it sounds like. The chapter where Grayson is saved by Clayton, one of the natives, he talks about bringing that the Carlisle Commandos have brought back Hendrick the Third, who's this Bandit King, who is not exactly liked.
No. No, and he's just been the most, lack of a better term, the smartest bandit. Because they've been raided by other ones, but this guy has managed to band together other lesser bandit kings to have under his rule, which is why he's like the overall bandit king. He's even gone to the point of having a treaty with Draconis Combine, who is the enemy of the Liren. So now that they're having this, their conflict, and they're bringing them to a Liren planet, it's kind of a little confusing. It's like, what are they thinking?
We were talking about that because when we were looking back at trying to figure a little bit of the history of Trell, that the Liren have had control of Trell for most of its occupation, or as long as humans have lived there. And so now in the book, Carlisle Commandos are supporting, or were supporting, different parts of the government and the Lord Vogel to create this pact with the Bandit King. And I think that also might be part of the reason why the natives are just so mad, because they finally have essentially peace on their planet, and it got leaked that they were handing it over to Hendrick the Third, who is this Bandit King, and the people are just a little bit pissed because, hey, you're handing us back to this ghetto gangster, kind of, and...
Well, and they kept it a secret. I think that was that's like another part of it. It's like, if they had to come out right and said, look, we're not going to be here forever, we need somebody else to be the military presence here to keep you safe, kind of thing, and let the people know what's going on, they might have been less annoyed.
Right.
But they chose the Bandit King to come in and take their place. So it's just bad decision upon bad decision.
That, well, and that's like the cool thing is about the book, how we were talking about the plot, is that I was really expecting this buildup of getting to know this main character who I did not think he was 20 at the beginning of the book. Like, the beginning of the book still really kind of throws me, in the sense that I did not expect it to go straight into, hey, I'm 20 years old and I'm going to be gaining, or I'm the heir to this massive lance and military. I was expecting it to be, like we had talked about, at a military training camp, not being raised, essentially being raised in the military by a military dad, and that, which is kind of cool. I wasn't being groomed to be the military, but I know what it's like to grow up in the military, so I can see where this is all coming from, but I kind of expected a little bit more. So I thought it was hard to wrap my head around the beginning, in the sense of, oh, all of a sudden, there's this traitor doing these things to the castle and the mech. And then all of a sudden, they're talking about this treaty, and this Lord Vogel is there waiting for an emissary from one of the other groups. And all of a sudden, Grayson's dad is out to meet them in his mech. And all of a sudden, he's under direct fire.
Yeah, something went wrong.
Something went wrong, right? I'm thinking the Bandit King double-crossed them. And looking at thinking like pirates, and even looking at the beginning of any society where you have people coming and going and handing over power, quite often there's something or someone somewhere that decides to come in and be like, hey, I'm the big gun here, and I'm going to use whatever alliance we have. Clayton, the son who saves Grayson, says that you guys were expecting him to actually hold true to this treaty when he's a bandit. He's a pirate.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Backstabbing is like part of his nature. So, you know, going through, I'm not entirely sure how long, you know, talks back and forth, you know, going to his planet, coming to this one, and forging a sort of an agreement, and then getting to the point where they're going to turn over power, and he goes, haha, no, I'm just gonna destroy you and take stuff by force.
Yeah. Talking about what happened in the story, just the fact that they had this treaty, Durant Carlyle, right, the captain, was going out to meet them with his Phoenix Hawk, which is the first real introduction to any of the mechs that we get in the book, right? Like, they talk about the Wasp, but they don't, or the other one that
they talk about the Shadowhawk being down for maintenance.
But we don't really see anything about it, right?
No, it's just in pieces in the mech bay being repaired, which we find out is actually not, it's been sabotaged, thus the repairs, not battle repairs.
Or just typical maintenance. So
yeah.
I thought it was a really cool introduction to the mechs, and I actually liked the fighting scene. I could imagine what it was like knowing the mechs. I've used a Phoenix Hawk, right? And I just won the Peahawk Award, which is absolutely hilarious, because anyways, we're gonna not talk about that. it was reading the chapter about the mech battle was really cool, because I have the background for BattleTech, right? For someone who doesn't have the background for BattleTech, might be a little bit odd for them. It wasn't completely out of the ordinary, but just the fact that he got shot how many times and then just gets back up.
Yeah, it was for a first introduction to the battle and the how the author writes the battles. It was almost immersive. Like you could close your eyes and you can picture this, you know, the glass cockpit with the digital overlays of, you know, your arm has damage, you're overheating, you know, your gyros are messed up, so you're falling down, and then you have to maneuver your mech to like stay standing. And like, we've rolled the dice, we've seen what on paper happens, but to have it kind of play in your head and you're watching this robot going through the motions was totally different.
Yeah, it is totally different from the game in this sense of how it happens, and it really kind of helped laid out the sense that, like, when we play the game, we have to shoot separately, right? Because we can't be like, I'm firing this and you're firing this and this is what happens, because you can't. But it's simultaneous, and the book did a really good job of describing that, which I really liked. It was easier for me to be able to picture or be able to visualize what we're doing in the game and how it actually would happen in a book. Like, I'm looking forward to hearing more about the battles.
Yeah, it should actually get really good.
Well, I don't know what's going to happen with mechs, because Grayson has no mechs now, and he's on a planet where he's an off-worlder, so he's not welcome. And to off-worlders that we haven't been introduced to any off-worlders other than the Bandit King and his group of clowns, then Grayson with the Carlyle Commandos, and then we have the other off-worlder that we get introduced to. I'm really intrigued about him. The character we're talking about, his name is Renfrew Tor. He's actually the guy who brought this Bandit King and all of his pirates to destroy Carlyle Commandos. And so I thought that was an interesting mix, because, hey, you brought this group that essentially wiped out my father and my mentor, but you just saved me, because he saves Grayson on the street, and now they're together.
It character foil. You have your essential, at this point, it looks like you have your good guy and your bad guy. But at the moment, they're both have the same goal.
Well, they're both like in the same position, right? In
stay
the
sense alive. That they're off-worlders. They're targeted. They're if they get caught, they die.
Well, and we found out, you find out in the last couple chapters, that Tor actually wasn't doing this of his own free will, which I think makes it a little bit easier for Grayson. Thinking about World War II, a lot of people who turned Jewish people in, they weren't doing it because they had something against the person. They were doing it to save their own hide.
Right.
And so looking at Torm, I could kind of see it being that way. But I also, I don't know how much of his story I believe. I want to believe it all, that he got duped into this and he thought he was just transporting back emissaries back and forth. But I don't know.
There's something else going on with him. Like, everything he told him about, you know, being down on his luck and needing to, you know, the credits to fix his ship, and then getting this offer to be
the pilot to do this. And then, you know, halfway through the transport, he basically gets stopped and the bandits go, okay.
He gets hijacked.
No, that's pretty much what it is. He gets hijacked. They add stuff to his ship to transport Max to the planet to double cross the Carlisles, and now he's stuck.
But it's that whole interaction of Tor with the bandit king's men or whatever. I felt really bad for the guy. And then I got to the point where he's describing what happened to the guys that were already on his ship that belonged to Hendrik. And this one quote, I was like, holy, this completely describes how vicious these pirates or these bandits can be. Tor says, Hendrik's old boys aboard ship, they went out the airlock. No fuss, no ceremony. Just out they went. I don't mind telling you, I was scared.
Yeah, watching the guys just boarded the ship who are supposed to be, well, allies with the other guys on the ship, put them in the airlock and open up the exterior door and away they go. Yeah, I'd probably do whatever they told me to do too.
Right? It's like, okay, so maybe he is telling the truth, but I also kind of hope he's not, just because that would add a good plot twist. But this was also written in the 80s, and I don't know, like, they're not as cynical as they are now.
I think he's hiding something. I think it might actually pertain more to his background, mm-hmm. of who he is.
Okay.
Not necessarily of how he got here.
Fair. Yeah, it could be, because it was a little, it seemed pretty clear, but still, I was going to say, how many people stick around doing what he did for so long without any kind of luck? But lots of people do it. So maybe he is just one of those people who just kept getting screwed over and over and over again. And this was just kind of the last straw, maybe.
So he's a Han Solo type.
Yeah, maybe. Oh, okay. Okay, we're going to have to come back to that one later, because that, yeah, I like that. So looking at the whole thing, I did have another question, and you might be able to answer this, Laura. So when Griffith first sees the face of the leader that's coming into the bay, right, where they're all at the castle before they're trying to get out in their transport to their own dropship, Grayson Carlisle pulls off this guy's mask, and Grayson says the guy's name, Singh. Don't know anything about him other than he's the war leader of these pirates. But why would, and I don't get this, but why did Griffith, instead of just shooting the guy, why did he call him so the guy had a chance to shoot him? Like, I don't get that. That makes no bloody sense. Why wouldn't you just shoot the bastard first?
Okay. Well, think about it like this. So most of the mechanics and even the guys that are working in the castle, like, I don't know, chambermaids, people cleaning, whatever, they're all native.
Right.
So this guy Singh could be somebody that they work closely with, you know? So they see him every day. They've befriended him, you know, go over to his house for dinner or meet his family or something. Like, wouldn't you be surprised if, you know, somebody you had got to know in the last 5 years suddenly was there doing something you didn't expect, especially to the grand scale of
destroying the whole commandos?
Like, wouldn't you go, oh my god, Laura, what are you doing?
Okay, yeah, saying it that way, but I'm like, in your these guys are all military trained, right? If they're in those kinds of situations, they're trained to shoot first and ask questions after, right? They're not there to be the whole passive aggressive, oh, let's talk this out kind of thing. I'm kind of confused, because in my mind, I'd be like, you son of a beep. And I wouldn't even just shoot him. But like, I can see it from both sides, but I'm just kind of like, I guess they do it in lots of movies and stuff too, right? It's the guy you hope is gonna be there to support the young hero. And they do something stupid so that young hero's without the mentor that they really need to be able to survive. And so they have to go through, like you said, a turning of age thing.
Yeah.
Okay, I can see that. But I just, logically, and logic does not dictate in Battletech, I very clearly know that. What, you find that funny?
Logic states if I jump into water, I should be fine.
Funny thing is, when I tried to describe that to my girlfriend Bobby, I'm like, you know when you jump into water and your feet kind of go out from underneath you? And so I should have known it wasn't going to work. But anyways, we digress. So yes, logic does not dictate in these kinds of things, because it's a story. I get it. But still, I just, being raised bi military guy, and this is the difference between your charge surviving or you getting a hold of this guy and getting his attention. Which one are you going to put higher? It's going to be the survival of the heir of the Carlisle Commando. That's what kind of throws me off.
Mm-hmm. We also don't know if Singh, he might pop up again. Maybe there's more to his story.
I think he's got to, because he didn't, from what we heard, Grayson passes out because they shoot him in the head, or they think they shoot him in the head, and it grazes his skull and he gets knocked out. But either someone connected to them in some way through another lance that's associated with the Lyran Commonwealth, or they're connected to, maybe not a native, but connected to the local government and somehow that they have a connection with somehow, but maybe not that kind of a connection, more of a work related, and that's why they're shocked.
Yeah,
we will. Did you have any questions that you were like really confused about?
Not really, nothing specific. I mean, I'm kind of curious what's going on with the title, because I mean, Thunder Rift, it's kind of specific.
Yeah.
And we do have a map at the beginning of the book that has a general layout with the castle and the spaceport.
Yeah.
And it has Thunder Rift labeled on the map, but it's actually quite far away.
Yeah, comparatively, looking at where the castle is compared to Sargad, it is a good distance, right? So, well, 10 kilometers, it's approximately, let's see, 20 to 30 kilometers?
Yeah.
Ish?
Ish.
So, well, if they have to get out of the city, right? And where else are they gonna go? Because there's some mountains by there that maybe they could hide in, but it's also depend. I don't know where in their timeline they are, because they said when it turns night, right? Because it's night for essentially days, right? When it's night, it's freezing cold because they have ice cap that happen overnight, and well, not overnight, but happen over their night.
Yeah, so they're not going to be traveling outside the city at night unless they've the deal.
Well, they're going to have steel. Yeah, I don't know where they're going to go. Like, even in the city, because they are, other than the guy who saved Grayson and his dad, who they wanted to be able to help them, but they couldn't help them anymore because they were keeping them at home, which, just like, again, in Germany, keeping a Jewish person in your house was not the most ideal thing, because even though you're not going to be the one to turn them in, you have neighbors, or the neighbors might be supporting you, but people find out, the Nazis find out, the local government and this Bandit King's peoples find out, well, everybody in the vicinity is dead or like drastically in danger. So I could see why they would want to get them out. So I don't think they could go back there.
No, and they did try to go, he did try and go see the girlfriend Mara.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, there were some guards at her place on patrol at the wrong, he just showed up wrong place, wrong time. And that's what sent him on the run.
So he went to go see Mara because Clayton and his dad both thought it would be good to go there because dad has a connection and Grayson does.
Dad is one of the king's administrators.
Yeah.
And he's one of the few, I got the impression he's one of the few that is actually not sympathetic, but he understands the need for off-worlders, but he's not prejudiced against them like some of the other people on the planet. So he was probably a good bet to try and go through Mara, talk to her dad to see if he can get off the planet.
But then so there was one thing that they said earlier when Grayson first shows up at the castle back on duty late. He was talking about how when he was saying to Mara that, like, goodbye, like doing their final goodbye because they're supposed to be leaving within days, that Mara reacted as if he was going to be staying.
I remember that. That kind of struck me as odd. Like, why would she not be all a bawling wreck of emotions because the guy she's been
hanging with,
fooling around with, hanging out with for the last 5 years,
holding hands and talking now.
Yeah, is saying goodbye because he's leaving in the next day or whatever it was. But she, like you said, she reacted like he wasn't going anywhere. So what did she know, or what is she aware of, maybe through her dad and the politic, that Grayson didn't?
Baroner was talking about how Mara's dad and the king were in support of this alliance. It was some of the other advisors that weren't. And so that throws another wrench into the whole thing of trying to figure out where Mara might be coming from and that comment earlier in the book.
So you think maybe they knew about this coup?
I don't know. I'm kind of up in the air trying to figure that out because, well, we don't really know what the full history is between all of them yet, right? So, and this is only book one of the three of the original trilogy. So I think there's a lot. I have a lot more questions. I wrote some more down. This is one I'm going to throw out to the listeners. So this planet, which is, according to the Battletech timeline, it is like a 2.5 point jump away from Earth. We'll learn about how that actual measurement, what that, all that measurement and stuff means later. But right now, 2.5 jumps away from Earth is the way that I understood it. So being that far out and the climate of the planet, the fact that it doesn't get the same kind of weather and everything that Earth does, the rotation, the size of it. Yes, it has oxygen, which is a huge thing to be able to live on because they're like, they've proven on Mars, as long as you have oxygen, you can grow in environments like that. Mm-hmm. But why would you settle on a planet like this? Not knowing anything about the universe or any other nearby planets, was this maybe the next best thing that they could get to? So that was a question I'm going to throw out to everybody. Like, why would some of the people who left Earth to move out into space, why would you choose to settle this specific planet?
Is the whole planet like that?
Yeah, or it's only 9%.
Just because there's at least two other major settlements on the planet. Sargad just happens to be the capital. So I'm wondering, like, is it just this region is dry and arid, or is it like the whole planet?
I'm pretty sure from what they were talking about, like the geology, it describes it as two small landlocked equilateral areas total 9% of the planetary surface area. Remaining surface is divided into rugged mountains and uplands and vast arid desert lowlands. Tidal stresses account for the high mountain ranges along the equator, as well as for continuing volcanism and seismic activity. So it's not like, I think Mars, but it's got breathable air and it has some form of, well, it doesn't even say anything about water on the planet, right? Like,
no, but you did say it had, overnight has the ice cap. So it has to have some liquid.
Yeah.
Like,
but it has, and oxygen has come from somewhere.
Yeah.
Right. So, but I'm pretty sure it's arid and rocky. I'm thinking like Mars or the like Arizona kind of area.
Yeah.
Or Colorado, just without all the trees. Plants? Even though they have some vegetation.
Yeah, well, the Badlands, the Hoodoos,
mm-hmm.
kind of like that, but mountainous. So, and they have to have some sort of greenery because, like you said, oxygen. Right. Where does it come from?
Yeah.
Like, water's only part of the equation.
Yeah, so tell us what you guys think. I'm really looking forward to. I've been waiting for days to keep reading, and I can't wait to do our talk again in 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
And then by the time this is released, it will be 2 weeks after that, we'll have the next broadcast, which will be on March 26th.
Our release will come out on March 31st.
We're recording on the 26th.
We record on the 26th, and then, but in between, the guys have another Ramble Tech that'll get released, so.
Yeah, and from what I heard you guys talking about it, it sounded kind of interesting.
Yeah, second conversation with the mystery guest, so you guys are going to have to
Tune in,
subscribe, set those reminders.
Yeah, that should come out next Friday, and then some more after that. So stay tuned, and we will talk to you all later.
Yep.